Thank you for joining me for the East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Santan and Queen Creek, so if you're ready, let's get going. The first article that I'm going to read is from the Queen Creek Tribune. Queen Creek removes limit on farm animals allowed on a one-acre lot. This was posted April 19th, 2026, and written by Janet Perez. This was courtesy of the town of Queen Creek. In keeping with its farming roots, Queen Creek has revised an ordinance that limited the number of agricultural animals that could be kept on a one-acre or larger property. During its April 15th meeting, the Queen Creek Town Council amended the ordinance to remove the limit on the number of farm animals allowed on larger properties and to focus instead on how the animals are cared for and managed. Not only has the limit been removed, but swine can now be kept as well. The ordinance that was approved was a result of a motion made by Vice Mayor Brian McClure. Under the ordinance revisions first proposed by town staff, residents could only add an additional animal or unit for every 3,000 square feet over 1 acre. That would mean a 50,000 square foot lot would see the number of permitted farm animals increase from 4 to 6. For a 2-acre lot, the number of animals allowed would go from 5 to 18. Staff also recommended that swine would only be permitted for educational purposes, such as part of a school or agricultural club project. An educational exemption also could be granted for those who exceeded the number of animals allowed. Staff was seeking to bring the ordinance back to pre-2019 language that allowed an additional animal for every 3,000 square feet over 1 acre. In 2019, the amount of extra square footage needed for more animals was changed to 30,000, making it the most restrictive in the neighboring Southeast Valley. In the end, McClure's version of the ordinance entirely removes the limit on animals on 1 acre properties, allows for keeping swine without the education component, and nullifies the need for any educational exemptions at all. McClure's motion did retain the updated animal welfare and management standards proposed by the staff. They include requiring shade for animals at all times, either provided by a structure or natural shade, such as trees, focusing on full containment and management of waste to prevent runoff and nuisances rather than a fixed 50-foot setback from property lines, permitting grazing in front yards with permanent stables remaining inside or rear yards, establishing a 25-foot setback for swine enclosures to mitigate potential odor and noise. Enforcement of the code will be triggered by nuisance complaints or concerns about animal welfare. Quote, our code team, by and large, is reactive, and so they do not necessarily drive around neighborhoods counting animals, looking for swine or anything like that as it relates to this ordinance, end quote, said Eric Swanson, the town's planning administrator. Council member Don Oliphant pointed out the number of properties this revised amendment would apply to is just 1,200 out of approximately 28,000 in the entire town. It applies to a small percentage of our community, which is what makes our community unique and amazing, Oliphant said. McClure's motion was unanimously approved by the council. The vote came after a number of residents, and even some considering becoming residents, spoke out about the need to remove the animal limit, allow swine, and no longer require educational exemptions. Quote, I have previously owned 4 pigs, 4 calves, and 4 horses on just over 1 acre, and they've all thrived, end quote, said resident Tiffany Baden. Quote, it's not about how many animals you have, but how you keep them. I never had a single complaint when I had all those animals. I encourage you to listen to your residents, as this is our way of life, and to remember the history of this town, its agricultural heritage, and why it was established, end quote. Janet Perez can be reached at jperez@iniusa.org. Please send your comments about this article to azopinions@iniusa.org. We are committed to publishing a wide variety of reader opinions as long as they meet our civility guidelines. End of story. Our next article is entitled, Have a Few Minutes? Help Shape the Future of Health in Your Community. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent on April 21st, 2026, no author is listed. Maricopa County Public Health is asking residents to take the 2026 Community Health Needs Assessment Survey. Your input helps identify what's working what needs attention, and how local health programs and resources are prioritized. This is your opportunity to share real-life experiences and help guide decisions that impact our community. To take the survey, visit bisinboyit.ly/26CHNA, or I have a telephone number. You can call 602-506-6767. End of story. Our next article is entitled Lottery Tickets Sold in Santan Valley Worth Nearly $550,000. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent the 22nd of April. No author is listed. Information is provided by the Arizona Lottery. A Walmart in Santan Valley sold a winning lottery ticket for Tuesday's Triple Twist that is worth $548,515. The store is located at 1725 West Hunt Highway, according to the Arizona Lottery. The winning Triple Twist numbers were 5, 12, 25, 27, 32, and 33. End of story. Our next article is entitled Two Teen Girls Missing from Queen Creek Found. This is courtesy of QCPD and posted in the Queen Creek Independent, April 18, 2026. The Queen Creek Police Department reports that two teen girls reported missing earlier this week have been found. Carly Lindsay, 15, and Emma Raphael, 16, were last seen on April 13th. Police stated on Saturday that the girls have been found and are safe. Four other teens remain missing. Christopher Anthony, 16, is white with brown hair and brown eyes. He is 5'6" and weighs 178 pounds. He was last seen in Queen Creek on April 13th at approximately 9 p.m. A clothing description was not provided. Cabron Rogers, 17, is a Native American with black hair and brown eyes. He is 5'6" tall and weighs 160 pounds. He was last seen in Queen Creek on April 13th at approximately 8:45 p.m. A clothing description was not provided. Brian Reyes, 16, is Hispanic with brown hair and brown eyes. He is 5'8" tall and weighs 130 pounds. He was last seen in Queen Creek on February 21st. Abriana Madrid, 14, is Native American with black hair and brown eyes. She is 4'10" tall and weighs 100 pounds. She was wearing a gray shirt and black pants and had a cut on her finger. She was last seen in Queen Creek on November 13th. In an effort to ensure the safety of missing teens, QCPD is no longer disclosing where they were last seen. Anyone with information on the missing teens is asked to contact QCPD at 480-358-3500 or call 911 if it is an emergency. End of story. Our next article is entitled Queen Creek Chamber Slates Women in Business Meet. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune, April 17, 2026. No author is listed. Business professionals from across the region will gather April 29th for the biannual Women in Business Conference hosted by the Queen Creek Chamber of Commerce and presented by Academy Bank. Billed as, quote, a morning of learning, connection, and fresh ideas, end quote, it will feature keynote speaker Deborah Gardner, breakout sessions, and vendor and networking opportunities for local businesses. Quote, our Women in Business Conference brings together professionals who are focused on improving performance, making sound decisions, and moving their work forward, end quote, said Chamber President, CEO Chris Clark. Quote, Deborah's keynote reflects the practical tone of the conference by emphasizing accountability, clear thinking, and trusting your judgment in challenging situations. Through focused sessions and discussion, attendees will gain useful perspectives they can apply in their organizations and in their day-to-day leadership, end quote. Her keynote, quote, your own lane, building self-trust that fuels record-breaking performance, end quote, draws on her recent history making Guinness World Record swim with sharks. At 66, Gardner last year became the oldest woman ever to swim the 21-mile Catalina Channel, a grueling overnight trek through cold, shark-filled waters under a glowing supermoon. Her address will explore the importance of trusting one's own judgment, taking decisive action, and moving forward with confidence in uncertain situations. Quote, in this high energy and engaging keynote, she will challenge women business owners and leaders to break through self-doubt, take bold action, and lead with clarity and conviction, end quote, according to a chamber release. Quote, attendees will walk away with practical strategies to build self-trust, turn resistance into forward momentum, and cultivate the fearless mindset needed to propel both their business and personal success forward with purpose, power, and joy, end quote. Tickets are $35 for chamber members and $55 for non-members. Sponsors are Academy Bank, Encantera Country Club, My Realtor, Marla Arzaga, and Affinity Dental. Businesses interested in participating as a vendor or sponsor can email Carrie, K-A-R-I, at queencreekchamber.com. Tickets, you can reach out to queencreekchamber.com. End of story. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Santan and Queen Creek. I'm Leslie Hunt, your volunteer reader. Continuing on, our next article is entitled Queen Creek Musician Turns Talents to Writing Children's Books. This was courtesy from Evolve Public Relations and Marketing. Franklin Smith is a country music artist based in Queen Creek. He released a children's book and a second is set to come out April 25th. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, April 14th, 2026, and written by Janet Pettis. A simple misunderstanding opened a whole new world for Queen Creek country music artist and now children's book author Franklin Smith. Around the time of the COVID pandemic, Smith took his grown children's advice and started writing a kid's book. It was initially a story about the adventures of two young Sasquatches on Mount St. Helens, an obvious setting for the Washington State native. I recruited a group of teachers and therapists to kind of be a focus group on this manuscript, which was not illustrated, Smith said. They all loved it, and so I was getting ready to illustrate it, but something was just missing from it. I don't know what it was, just an instinct that it was missing that magical component. As the pandemic eased, Smith started to help a friend who was building a house. The friend told him he planned to see Smith perform that evening and asked him if he planned on playing any Shania Twain. Standing at the top of a ladder, Smith's response was, I hope I don't. He goes, what's a hope I don't? I kind of slurred my words together, and I said to him, what did you say? And he goes, what's a hope I don't? And I thought that was pretty cute, Smith said. Smith had his, quote, magical component. Taking a break from helping his friend, Smith immediately began writing about the creatures that would become the hope I don'ts. All one word. The Hope I Don'ts are small bean-shaped creatures that take part in the adventures of the young Sasquatches, Buzz and Budger, and all their friends. The Hope I Don'ts are used to illustrate various emotions kids are trying to understand. Suddenly, Smith's initial book had been transformed and started creating a buzz. He began receiving phone calls from companies interested in the book as well as from Mark Mardarosian, a longtime illustrator who has worked for Disney. He contacted me and said, I came across your manuscript. I think you need to hire me to do this property. And I was like, what's a property? Smith said. Everybody kept telling me, you just don't know what you have yet. And I didn't know what that meant. Franklin soon found himself in meetings with educators, therapists, and other experts getting a crash course on social-emotional learning. He then took to the road and began visiting children's hospitals, meeting with kids and the folks in charge as he tried to get a handle on just what he had created. I'm the least equipped person to write a children's book on social-emotional learning, so as I traveled around, I was just interviewing and understanding. Talking to kids was an eye-opener for Smith. One of his Hope I Don'ts is meant to illustrate anger. Smith thought the appropriate color would be red. The kids had other ideas. Well, when I was out on the road reading the kids, before I had it fully illustrated, I was asking them, hey, what color do you think of when you think of anger? He said. To Smith's surprise, the kids said green because of the Incredible Hulk. Despite the expense, Smith next hired Mardosian to illustrate his first Hope I Don't book. I got it done. I got it all illustrated. It took me 6 months of working paycheck to paycheck to get it illustrated, he said. With Mardosarian and Ali Crocker co-writing, Smith's Simple Tale has grown into a business. I Hope I Don't Books, a, quote, character-based social emotional learning company dedicated to supporting children's emotional development, end quote, according to its website. Smith's first book is called Slime Time Fun, and his second, Balbina the Bear Learns to Swim, is set to be released on April 25th. Besides being marketed to kids, the Hope I Don't books are offered to teachers as a part of social emotional learning packs that include 13 coloring and activity pages right in the books, as well as conversation prompts to help students talk through topics and emotions. The lessons are built by therapists and teachers, not me. I just write the darn stories, but I got a whole team of people that build that stuff, and they're awfully gifted with kids, Smith said. I just care about writing a resource to do one thing, help a kid identify how they're feeling in that moment. Am I happy? Sad? Am I feeling guilty? Am I embarrassed? That's the only thing that matters to me. End of story. Janet Pettis can be reached at jpettis@iniusa.org. Please send your comments about this article to azopinions@iniusa.org. We are committed to publishing a wide variety of reader opinions as long as they meet our civility guidelines. Our next article is entitled Queen Creek Debuts Portable Drone to Help Firefighters. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, April 20th, 2026, and written by Janet Pettis. Using drones for public safety isn't new, but the Queen Creek Fire and Medical Department's innovative take on the technology could provide help for its firefighters during various incidents. Drone by first responder programs generally travel from a stationary base to an incident that could be miles away. Queen Creek revamped the traditional deployment system and implemented a mobile base that allows for more efficient use of drones. This mobility is achieved by mounting a remote-piloted unmanned aircraft system, dubbed Dorothy, on a sliding tray in the battalion chief's vehicle, which is then deployed when the unit arrives at major calls. The drones send out through Dorothy provide real-time aerial footage to incident commanders before crews even arrive on the scene. By us being able to drive the drone to the scene gives us a lot of different capabilities. One, we're not transversing over homes or parks or things like that, said QCFMD firefighter Sigfredo Castro, who took the lead in developing the mobile system. When you're going from point A to point B, you have to take the weather into account and you have to take the battery life into account. We removed all those aspects of it so we're able to stay on station longer and provide the incident commander with a whole new set of eyes. The drone is equipped with thermal imaging capabilities and can assist with a range of incidents, including structure fires, brush fires, major crashes, search and rescue operations, and hazardous material situations. Live video feeds are transmitted directly to command staff and responding units to help guide decisions in real time. When a battalion chief arrives at the incident scene, he slides the tray where Dorothy is mounted in the truck, and from there, trained firefighters such as Castro pilot the drones remotely. Meanwhile, the battalion chief and battalion safety officer are the on-the-ground eyes as the drones are being flown remotely. Perhaps the most important aspect of Dorothy is it adds another layer of protection for QCFMD personnel battling a blaze. In one incident a few months ago, Dorothy guided firefighters to safety as they took on a fire in a large home. We were able to see the instability of that structure with that drone, and that allowed us to talk with the incident commander to let them know that, hey, we need to get crews to exit out of the structure, which they did, Castro said. Then 60 seconds after they exited the structure, that structure did collapse. The drone's infrared systems provide night vision capacity, which comes in handy as an estimated 75% of calls take place in the evening hours, Castro said. Dorothy also helps QCFMD to strengthen its good neighbor policy by assisting fire departments in nearby towns such as Mesa, Gilbert, and Phoenix. Castro began working on the project that would become Dorothy in 2025 and ran it through a variety of trial flights. He was a natural for spearheading the new program as he spent 13 years in the United States Army as an aviation operations specialist. I was a really easy transition for me to kind of take on this program, Castro said. Our drone program has actually been around since 2018. I just happened to revamp it in 2025, and I just took some of that past knowledge and experience that I have and then absorbed what the current fire service is doing. Currently, there are 7 pilots on QCFMD's drone team who are constantly training, but not every drone operator gets to use Dorothy. Dorothy is a whole different level of skill and training that we make mandatory for our pilots to learn and have X amount of hours, Castro said. To just even be able to be part of the drone team, you have to have a Part 107 license that allows you to be a commercial drone pilot, and then we have other in-house trainings. I would say the training is pretty rigorous on our end, but that's what we want from our pilots. All drone operations are conducted in accordance with federal aviation regulations and are limited to emergency response and approved public safety training. Dorothy's docking platform and 8 drones cost the town about $103,000. That's money well spent to ensure the safety of the community and especially that of firefighters. Dorothy has proven to protect the lives of our firefighters and optimize how we respond to emergencies, Vice Mayor Brian McClure said. This advancement in technology is helping make our community even safer for both our residents and our first responders. End of story. Janet Perez can be reached at jperez@iniusa.org. Please send your comments about this article to azopinions@iniusa.org. We are committed to publishing a wide variety of reader opinions as long as they meet our civility guidelines. Our next article is entitled Valley Houses Still Young But Aging Fast. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune, April 11, 2026. No author is listed. Arizona remains one of the nation's youngest housing markets, but in Phoenix and much of the East Valley, the region's biggest waves of growth are no longer new, and that is beginning to matter. A recent National Association of Home Builders analysis of 2024 American Community Survey data gathered by the U.S. Census Bureau found the median age of owner-occupied homes nationwide reached 42 years in 2024. In Arizona, the median was 29 years, making the state one of the youngest owner-occupied housing markets in the country, according to the NAHB. But a closer look at Valley City shows a different story emerging. In Phoenix, the median home was built in 1984, meaning much of the city's housing stock is now about 40 years old, roughly in line with the national average. That puts Phoenix at a turning point, no longer a quote-unquote new housing market, but not an old one either. In Ahwatukee, one of the city's major master planned areas, housing age varies sharply by neighborhood. Homes in the zip code 85044 were largely built in the 1980s and early 1990s, making them among the older parts of the community. In 85048 and 85045, most homes date to the late 1990s and early 2000s. Even there, however, much of the housing stock is now 20 to 30 years old, entering the new state where major systems begin to require replacement. By contrast, much of the East Valley remains newer, though it too is aging. Queen Creek remains a late-growth market dominated by 21st-century construction, while Tempe and Mesa have much older housing bases shaped by earlier development cycles. Gilbert and Chandler, meanwhile, sit in between, younger than many legacy cities, but old enough that their biggest development waves are now a generation old. Median construction years show a clear progression across the region. Queen Creek, 2012, Gilbert, 2003, Chandler, 1997, Scottsdale, 1991, Mesa, 1989, Tempe, 1984. The numbers highlight how Phoenix sits between older, built-out communities and the still-growing suburbs on the region's edge. That contrast is even clearer when Phoenix is compared with older U.S., quote, legacy cities, end quote, where housing stock often predates World War II. In cities like Cleveland and Pittsburgh, median home construction dates fall into the 1950s or earlier, while places like Philadelphia and Chicago have large shares of homes built before 1940. By comparison, Phoenix has relatively little truly old housing. Most of its development came in the post-war boom and late 20th century, but that housing is now entering a new phase. Homes built during the Valley's major suburban expansion in the 1980s 1990s and early 2000s are reaching the stage where major systems, roofs, air conditioning units, plumbing, and electrical require repair or replacement. Even in communities, those newer communities, however, this housing stock is entering middle age. Nearly half of all owner-occupied homes in the U.S. were built before 1980, reflecting a broader trend of aging housing as construction has struggled to keep pace with demand. For local governments, utilities, and homeowners, the shift carries practical implication. Aging housing stock often brings increased demand for maintenance, infrastructure upgrades, and reinvestment in older neighborhoods. It also changes how communities think about growth. The Valley is still adding new homes on its edges, but in cities like Phoenix, Mesa, and Tempe, attention is increasingly turning to maintaining and, in some cases, redeveloping existing housing stock rather than simply building new. Quote, "The age of the housing stock is an important remodeling market indicator," end quote, the National Association of Home Builders, NAHB, said last week, end quote. Our older homes tend to be less energy efficient than newly built homes and are more likely to require repairs, upgrades, and renovations in the future. At the same time, as people increasingly use their homes for multiple purposes and demand additional space, older housing represents an investment opportunity for homeowners, end quote. The age of the owner-occupied housing stock varies greatly across 50 states, according to the survey. New York has the oldest owner-occupied homes with a median age of 64 years, followed by Massachusetts, 59, and Rhode Island, 59. Half of all owner-occupied houses in the District of Columbia were built more than 80 years ago, although the NAHB noted, quote, however, D.C. is generally not a representative market given its smaller size and highly urbanized environment, end quote. In contrast, newer owner-occupied housing is particularly concentrated in the Sun Belt states, where 14 out of 15 states, the exception being California, 45, have a median owner-occupied housing stock age below the national median. The median age of owner-occupied homes in Nevada is only 25 years, followed by Texas at 28 years. South Carolina, Georgia, and Arizona also rank among the states with the newer homes, where half of the owner-occupied homes have been built within the past 29 years, according to the survey data. Quote, "The geographic distribution of owner-occupied housing stock age reflects underlying population changes," end quote, the NAHB said. Quote, "Population growth, including both natural growth and net migration, signals rising demands for housing and typically leads to more new construction. As a result, the rapid population growth states like Idaho, Nevada, South Carolina, Texas, Florida tend to have newer owner-occupied housing stock." End of story. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Santan and Queen Creek. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.